Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. It's Larry Kay from Visalia, and when things get crispy in his life, he goes straight to the Serenity Prayer.
Hi, my name's Larry. I'm an alcoholic. But she forgot to tell you that most of the time I go to the Serenity Prayer, it's through gritted teeth. And when I pray for the son of a bitch, well, so you can kind of get my drift. As I said, my name's Larry. I'm an alcoholic. I come from an alcoholic family, okay, straight up. Most everybody in my family was an alcoholic. I grew up that way, and I saw it, and I observed it, and I lived it. The long and short of it is that, you know, I ended up becoming what I swore I would not, what I despised, what I saw. And I became exactly that, and in most cases, I became worse. The fact of the matter is that it was, as I was growing up in the 50s, I grew up in Southern California. It was down by East Los Angeles. It was a place called Montebello and Pico Rivera, Downey, that area. And in the 60s, Hollywood was the big thing, and I used to go out there with a friend of mine, and we used to get in a whole bunch of trouble. And there was other dry goods involved in that little foray, but the fact of the matter is that most of the time I spent drinking. Drinking was my drug of choice. I liked alcohol. I liked the effect of alcohol. I liked the taste of alcohol. I couldn't get enough alcohol. And the fact of the matter is that the more I drank, the worse it got. By the time I was 17, I quit getting hangovers. You know, for what it's worth. I mean, you know, I didn't feel all that good, but it wasn't like suffering a hangover. You know, like, it just felt like it was a cloudy day. Does anybody understand what I'm talking about? You know, no, I didn't think so. We were also indulging, you know, in the 60s, there was a lot of other stuff, obviously. And it was, Timothy Leary and all that nonsense and, you know, hippies and protests and, you know. And really, if the truth be told, most of the guys only went to a protest to get loaded or laid. And that was it. And that was the truth of it. I mean, nobody really cared, you know. It was there were some. I'm being facetious, but at the same time, that's kind of what it was. That's kind of where it was at in those days. By the time I was 21, this was about 1972. I got my first DUI. How I got my DUI was they were moving a house at about 2 a.m. down a road. And the road was one of these that went up and down. And I remember vaguely seeing something lit up on the top of the hill as it was heading in the down. And I was just going like a bat out of hell trying to get home. And the next thing I know, I woke up in the hospital. I hit a house in my car. I don't recommend it. Yeah, I tell people there was a welcome mat out on the front, on the back porch, and, you know, things like that, but that doesn't work, you know. The fact of the matter is that I hit this house, I was in the hospital, and it was probably about 2.5 hours later that, I woke up, or came to, it was probably more to the point, and the cop asked me how much I had to drink. I muttered something, probably one. I forgot to tell him it was 1/5 of Seagram's 7, and I drank it right after I got off work, and I had just gotten off work probably about 3 hours before that. So, you know, it took 2.5 hours to get into the hospital. They thought I was dead. My car was a convertible at this point. I'd run it under the house and where the support beam was. And I had this little hopped up Volkswagen, and it was a built up motor, and we had a lot of fun. I was in a club and that type of thing, but it was a Beetle, and the roof was literally shoved to the back with such velocity that the motor that's located in the rear was in my back seat. It was the only night I did not wear a seatbelt. I'm glad, because a support post, which was probably about this big for the house, took the roof, and with it, part of the roof grabbed me in the head, but I was laying like this on the windowsill because I'd rolled down the window to try and wake up, come to a little bit. And had I been wearing the seatbelt, because we used to go to the drag races, had I been wearing the seatbelt, I would have been like this, and I would have been decapitated. So when the cop asked me how much I'd had to drink, he said, well, we took a blood test. You know, you don't mind, do you? Well, what can I say? You know, I'm in the hospital. You know, they're sewing my head up. I mean, I had glass and all sorts of crap. There's, you know, it was an ugly, ugly thing that happened to me. I looked like a space alien because the eyes all bloodshot, you know, it's all burst blood vessels. So, you know, I had this one blue eye sticking out of a bunch of red, you know, and it was that type of thing. When I went to court, the DA, he was actually an assistant DA, said that I should plead no contest, primarily because my blood alcohol count, when they took it, this is 2.5 hours after I got into the hospital, was 0.36. I was 21 years old. You can kind of see where this is going. As with most DUIs, I took, you know, I had to jump through the hoops. I lost my license for a while. I had to pay a fine, you know. And anybody that's been through it knows what I'm talking about. But this is in 1972, so no, the fines weren't probably what they're like today. But in 1972 dollars they were, you know. And losing your license, well, shoot, buses don't run in L.A. all that well, you know. And so I had to get back and forth to work. So I had to do everything I could to get my license back. And I did, and I paid the fines, and I did all the things. But one of the things they did in those days was they gave me a little court card. And the judge at the time said, I think you may need to go to these. Now, with a blood alcohol count of 0.36, 21 years old, why would he think that? But I did, because I wanted, you know, I wanted this past me. I wanted to get it past me. So I went to AA meetings. Well, in those days, the AA meetings were filled with a bunch of old people. I mean, they were at least 30 or older. So, mind you, I'm 21 years old. I'm not relating to any of this. Nah, I don't need this stuff. I got the card signed off. I was dutiful. I did my due diligence. I was still drinking and other things. And I got the hell out of Dodge as soon as I had to, you know, here it is. It's all filled. It's done. Just what you asked. And I got out of there. And I went back out for 3 more years. My next, 3 years later, it didn't get better. I wish I'd like to say, yeah, it was great, man. That was a great 3 years. No, it, you know, it really got worse, and it got worse, and it got worse. And I tell the story about my last drunk, and essentially, a lot of people won't believe it. I don't care if they do or not. It doesn't matter to me, but it's what happened. Okay? went over to a girlfriend's house. I went through the front door. She had locked me out. So I took the door out. I took it out with my shoulder. It was laying on the ground along with the frame. I was a little angry, just a little bit. And the next thing I know, there were four of L.A. County's finest trying to convince me that I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. They were being pretty successful. However, I did punch one of them in the nose and bloodied his poor little uniform, and I knew I was dead. As soon as I hit it, I knew I was dead. But that, they were putting me, they had me down on the ground. They were kicking my ass 6 ways from Sunday. But it wasn't that. It was the fifth cop who came through, and he filled the doorway. And I'm not kidding. I mean, it was like about this far from the top of the door sill, about this wide, you know. And he put his hand on his revolver. It is clear as day. And he said, look down at me, and I'm getting my ass kicked. He says, son, you're going to lose. And I immediately had a moment of clarity. And I gave up. Now, I know I'm going to jail because I'd hit a cop. You know, you don't hit a cop and not go to jail. Here's the weird part about the story, if you don't think that was weird enough. The big cop, after talking to me for a period of time, said, go home. True. Absolute truth. And I looked at him, I said, are you kidding me? He says, go home. I said, okay, I'm still wrecked, man. I'm half wrecked. He wants me to get in my car, drive home. And I'm still, you know, I don't know how drunk I was, but I was pretty well hammered. And he told me to go home. I did. But the next day I woke up, came to, probably is better, but when I did, I started thinking about, and what I could remember, I just went, oh man, you know, what a load. And from my last visit to Alcoholics Anonymous, which was 3 years prior to that, I knew some people that were in the program, and I called them. I was at work, and I called them. I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking, and I got to stop drinking. And they didn't know what happened, but I eventually told them. But they came right away. They came to my work, and we had coffee, and we sat down, and we talked for a long time. And they took me to a meeting. The meeting that night was at their house with a cassette recorder listening to a speaker. And that was my first meeting. I don't know who the speaker was. I don't know what he said. I have no clue. It's my first night trying to stay sober. And that was my beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. The next night I went to an actual meeting up where I got sober, where I called my home group, was Whittier, California, a place called Serenity Hall. Now I will tell you this about Serenity Hall. The name is wrong, okay? It's very high drama at Serenity Hall. There's a lot of drama at Serenity Hall. However, there is a bunch of good people there, and they still are, okay? But that's where I began getting sober, beginning the one step at a time, one day at a time. And because I said, I got to stop drinking, I got to do something, I decided I would attack this program. And so attack it I did. I went to the meetings. I cleaned ashtrays. I mopped floors. Organized dances. I became a secretary. I became a GSR. Just boom, boom, boom. Whatever I could do. And I'm working 60, 70 hours a week on top of that. Well, I'm a young guy. I mean, you know, so I can pull it off. I'm still tired, you know, like a lot of people get, but I could pull this off. So I did that. And I got involved. And I went to step study meetings, okay, with the 12 and 12. And I went to book study meetings. And we read the book, and we parsed words. And, you know, people would have different takes on certain sentences and things like this. And it was all good. And I read the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got involved, okay? I read the books, Pass It On, you know, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, things like that. This is before Chuck Chamberlain wrote his book, A New Pair of Glasses. And so I never got to read that one, but I was reading all these others. I was reading the Hazelden books. I was reading, you know, and my favorite book, I mean, at the time it was Bottles and Stools at the time. And then later on, one of my favorite books is As Bill Sees It. And Bill was, you know, one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, you know, I would read these things and kind of get the thoughts of the people that began this stuff. And I just kept going to meetings, and I'd meet other people, and we'd talk about different things. And, you know, somebody would give me advice, I'd give somebody else advice. You know, we traded advice, we'd hit roundtable advice. I mean, it was good. It was all good. You know, there was always the meeting after the meeting, which was always usually better than the meeting. Okay? You know, it was at the coffee shop, and people are, you know, it was good stuff. We went to ball games, we did different things, we'd go to plays, we'd go to whatever your thought was that you had at that time, you could do it because I was sober. Okay? And I had nothing, no other responsibility than to myself to stay sober. That was it. I did the steps. And it got to a point where I came to the amends steps. And I went around and I did my amends the best that I could. And I hooked up with that girlfriend on my last drunk. I'd hooked up with her once before, but then I left. It was just a bad thing. But there came a point a few years later that I had to make amends. And I knew I had to make amends. I tried before, but that didn't, you know. And so I tried to see her. Now, for some reason, I have no idea why, she wouldn't see me. And so I was insistent. I got to make this amend. I got to do this, you know. And so, and a couple years would pass. And I'm not kidding about this. A couple years would pass. And somebody that we both mutually knew, and I said, you know, I'd really like to get together with her, sit down and have a cup of coffee. Okay, I got some things I have to say to her. She absolutely refused to meet with me for some unknown reason. Well, I knew the reason, and that's the reality of it. So I went to somebody and I said, you know, I can't get together with this person to make amends. She won't take my letters, she won't take my calls, she won't meet with me, she won't do any of these things. How do I get an amends? He said, you know what? And I had stumped the sponsor. I don't know. He says, you'll have to talk to God and figure that out for yourself. That's a new concept. Talk to God. And I did. And the reason I bring this up is because other people may find themselves in this kind of predicament. And what my amends was this. That I told God that my amends to her would to be sober one day at a time. I'm happy to say that from that day to this, in April it'll come. I'm coming up on 40 years. And as proud as I am of that, It's not for me. The credit is not to me. The credit goes to a power greater than myself that I choose to call God. Now, when I came into this program, I didn't believe in God. Okay? I've told other people, there's a lot of people sitting here, and I've told them this. I said, I came in as an atheist. I didn't, what's a God? I didn't have a religious background. I didn't have any of that. That's how basically I was raised. I looked up to my Uncle Larry, who I'm named after, and, no, I am, and, no, really, no, and he was actually my great uncle, and my mother's uncle, and I was named after him, and I had a lot of respect for this guy. He was one of those of the great generation. Okay, he was born in the early 20th century, went to that one-room schoolhouse, grew up and worked through the Depression, went to World War II. He went in as a CB, okay, which was a new group at that time in 1942. And, you know, he went through the war. And he came out of the war and he started his own business and he lived a pretty contented life. I have a lot of respect for him, but he had a lot of hard bark on him. And where I was heading with this is only that these are the people that raised me, and they taught me a lot of different things. But one of them was that he did not believe in God. I'm not going to go there, but there was a lot of issues with him and people that would come to the door. You know those people? And he would talk to them, and he'd carry on conversations, and then he'd ask them a question, and they'd be stumped, and he'd go, goodbye, you know, and off he went. And I watched all of this. I saw all of this. This is how I was raised, folks. So when it came to a power greater than myself, I had no idea. I had no concept. I had nothing to back me up on this. So when I got here, my simplistic prayer as a skeptic, my first night sober, was, God, please help me. And he did. The next day, I was able to fall asleep. I didn't pass out. I didn't have to drink. You know, this is my first night sober. You know, it would have taken me at least a half a quart to get to sleep. You know, maybe a couple of beer bags. But the fact of the matter is, I went to sleep. I was able to get up, go to work, do my thing. And, you know, at that moment, the skeptic began to become a believer. I realize it's simplistic, but the fact of the matter is, for a guy like me who had nothing to back him up, this is how it began for me. Now, my concept of a higher power was something beyond, and I'm not going to get into the details of it, but I had a different concept than probably a lot of people. And I had a picture in my mind, but it was greater than myself. It was larger than myself. It was beyond my comprehension as a human being. I was a mere speck compared to this thing. But as time went on, and as I got more and more into the program, my concept of God began to change. And I had no issue with that. You know, and I've come to believe in a power greater than myself that today I choose to call God. Prior to that, I always called it my higher power. Okay? But it worked. And it got me to this point. I'm trying to explain, especially to new people, you know, it's a day at a time, it's a step at a time, it's a moment at a time, it's an evolution. You grow through this thing, okay? And even if you don't want to grow, you're going to grow in this thing as long as you're sober. You're going to have times that you're going to go, God, if I was drunk, I would never have believed I would have had this much fun. Laugh all night, laugh all day. Okay, just joyous. Just a joyousness about being sober. But if you're new, you're going to find that a little hard to believe. And I understand. I didn't believe it either. I thought all my fun was over. I'm 24 years old. I'm coming into a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought my fun was over. Man, I can't go to the bars. Okay? Although I didn't really particularly like the bars at the time because it was disco. And I didn't like disco the first time around. I like it less now. I was a hard rock and roller, man. I'm from the 60s, you know. Yeah, I'm a Led Zeppelin guy. Anyway, I'm trying to have a little fun because we are not a glum lot.
Amen.
We are here to have a good time.
Amen.
As long as we are sober, you can have the best time of your life. You know, I found out a few things along the way, along my path of sobriety, is that I can do anything I want. Anything I want. As long as I'm willing to pay the price. Ooh. Ooh. Now we get into finances and romances. Am I willing to pay the price? I've become a little wiser in my older age. So as a consequence, there's things that I used to do that I no longer do, and I'm happy about that. Thank you very much. But I tell you what, in sobriety, as long as you know what you're doing and you don't have to drink over it, you can pretty much do anything you'd like, as long as you're not harming somebody else. And if you do harm somebody else, make amends. Do the best you can to make it right. You know, I got to a point where I got into the 10th and the 11th step. That's page 86 and 87 of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I moved away. I moved from L.A. into the Coachella Valley, which is out by Palm Springs, if you don't know. And it's actually a place called Indio, which is an armpit of the United States. Anyway, Yuma is a different orifice. Okay, that's Arizona. That's a different spot. But I moved there, and I'm hooked up with some people that had actually moved out from the San Fernando Valley. And I talked to them, Wes and Eileen, and he became my sponsor. And every time I go to him with some sort of whiny-ass complaint, he would go, reach page 86 and 87 of the big book. That was his advice. I probably went to his house probably 300-400 times, and I always walked away with read page 86 and 87 of the big book. And I'm like, God, does this son of a bitch don't know, does he not know anything else in that book? Look, yes, he did. Okay. He was a very wise man, and he was very understanding, and he got me into that page, 86 and 87 of the big book, which is the 10th and 11th step. And that is to try and develop a conscious contact with a power greater than myself that today I choose to call God. And I try to do that. I tried to do it then. I was pretty hit and miss. But as time went on, I grew into a habit that I'm very happy with. And so, for the most part, not every day, I'm not 100%, but almost every day, I get into a conscious contact with a power greater than myself. Now, God understands that life gets in the way sometimes. We have to deal with things. Sometimes it's immediate. Sometimes it's... So we forget, but we can always start over. That was one of the good things about this thing. You can always start your day over. If it's noon and you're having lunch and you had a bad morning, let's start it over at noon. Let's start this day over. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We've had a horrible afternoon. Let's start it over. Through gritted teeth sometimes, God grant me the serenity. You know, after a day like today at work, you know, it was gritted teeth, believe me. And we don't always like the things we're handed or have to do, but they're necessary. They're a part of living. That is what this program has given me, is to deal with life on life's terms, okay, on a daily basis. To live life on life's terms. Now, before, I always had to have a drink over something or at something or because of something. Anybody else ever? Probably not. I'm probably the only one, you know. And that's how I dealt with life on life's terms. So if you be alcoholic and you be new, you know what I'm talking about. That's how I dealt with life on life's terms. Okay? Now, here comes this book. We call it the Big Book. And it tells me what exactly I have to do to deal with living on life's terms. Wow. This is neat. You mean I really have to forgive him? Or forgive her? Or, you know, I really got to pay that back? I got to do these things? I don't know about this, you know. But I feel better when I do it. I feel satisfied. I feel relieved. I feel good about myself. And as a result, I have to give the credit to God because He guides me on a daily basis. He helps me on a daily basis. He doesn't always give it to me when I want, but He always gives me an answer. And sometimes the answer is not something I want to hear today. Okay? I want to hear something else, God. Come on. I'm on a timetable. He isn't. Okay? But that's the way it works. You know, I had a guy I used to sponsor, and I used to piss him off every time because I would tell the story of the blue whale. Because he'd ask me something, and I said, "Well, you know, it's the story of the blue whale." And he'd look at me, and he'd, you know, kind of quizzically, and he'd go, "Well, what's the story of the blue whale?" I said, "The blue whale is the largest living mammal on this planet, but it only has a mouth this big. Do you know why?" And he'd go, "No, why?" I said, "Because that's the way it is." That's the way it is. And some days are like that. That's the way it is. It wasn't a great day today. But that's the way it is. But it got better. But that's the way it is. God, I wish electricity came to me free, you know? I mean, I think it should. That's just my opinion. But it doesn't, and I have to pay the bill. Because that's the way it is. So you kind of get my point by me repeating it a few times in these kind of concepts, that sometimes that's how I have to deal with things. You know, and I have to turn to that power greater than myself, and I say, "Get me out of this, God, please, because I'm real pissed off." Okay? I'm going to rip his head off, you know, and he calms me down and he gets me back on track. And that doesn't happen that often much anymore, but it does happen occasionally. I'm only human, okay? I wish I was Mahatma Gandhi, but I'm not. You know, I am not God's best work, trust me on this, okay? But I try. And you know what? That's all He's asking of us, to try. He's not asking for perfection. He's not asking you to be out there and be, you know, peace-loving, you know, all that nonsense. He's not asking that. He's asking you to live your life the best you can, trust in Him, and be happy, joyous, and free, no matter what it is. Happy, joyous, and free. How to live your life. Man, even at the worst possible moments, to be happy, joyous, and free, sometimes it's hard. But I'll tell you what, most of the time, if I trust God, He gets me there. I love to laugh. I love to have a good time. I love the guys I work with, we have fun all day long. We kid each other, we tease each other, and we do our work. Okay? We put our heads down sometimes, and that's what it takes to take care of business. But when it's that brief moment where we can kind of relax and smoke and joke and have a good time, that's when we do. And we do. And we try and have a little fun. Inject a little fun into your life at least once a day. And if you can do it more, by all means, try. Because that's what God wants. He wants you to be happy. He wants you to be joyous. He wants you to be free. Free of alcoholism. Free of a compulsion. Free of an addiction. And He wants you to fill the void with His love. And that is how this program works. It's a little bit at a time. It's an inch at a time. It's a day at a time. Okay? But I guarantee you, you're going to have a life far beyond your wildest dream. You won't even know where it came from. You're going to be sitting here, you know, when I was in the bar, I used to dream about being a fighter pilot. You know, I was going to be an astronaut. You know, and now all of a sudden you're up in Virgin Galactica flying over the Earth, and you go, how the hell did I get here? That, you know, and I'm exaggerating, obviously, but I'm trying to make a point that this is where we can do it. For the young people, you know, you have opportunity. If you stay sober, you have so much opportunity. You might not see it now, but I guarantee you that you can make adjustments. You can do things. I see people, great examples, sitting around here. People I know, happen to know. And they've done amazing things with their life. Sometimes they don't think so, but they have. Okay? They've worked very hard to get it. But it was through God's grace that gave them the ability to do that. And they live a very, you know, in the 12 and 12, in the 11th step, it talks about it. And I love this little sentence. I've carried it with me for, what, 38 years, 39 years. And it said, and we will find that we can return to a relatively, keyword, normal way of life. Without all the drama, without all the headaches, without all the heartaches, maybe money in the pocket, maybe a few things that we can do, that we can claim that we have, like going back to school, getting a degree, becoming a brain surgeon. I don't care. Okay? It's achievable, and it can be done. But it begins here. And with that, I'm really grateful that you guys were here, because this is my 12th step. And I'm grateful that you paid a 12-step call on me. So thank you very much.